Now this is Channel 2 over. This is Channel 2 over, and a continuation of the visit with Lois and Florence at Lois's big dining room table on Wednesday, the 23rd of July, 69. This is Channel 2 over, and a continuation of the visit with Lois and Florence on Lois's big dining room table on Wednesday, the 23rd of July, 1969.
I think her sensitivity, most of the time, you just get the idea that she's just sort of light and gay.
Yeah.
But sometimes you see this other quiet, sensitive person that she is. In fact, there have been two times when I've seen this. Once, she just always seems to have this vigor and zest. And I said, Lois, it's just wonderful, you know, that you just never seem to tire and can go on like this. And she turned very thoughtful all of a sudden. She said, my mother said that to me. She said, when she was ill, lying on the bed in there, and she said, Lois, I've always admired you because you always seem to be cheerful and can carry on. And she said, you know, that meant so much to me. And she was almost, you know, she still remembered it, almost in tears. And her mother, that long time, would have noticed this through the years and finally given her this compliment, you know. And so she always attempts to keep this up, but at times she does get a little tired. And then when I was, evidently, although she said she was closer to her father, she's close to her mother too. And she gave me a piece of New World Symphony, and I fortunately played it better than some I do. And when I got through, she said that was just beautiful, and she said that was my mother's favorite piece. I think she had it played at her funeral. Yeah. And she was just almost misty-eyed that time, you know, just in her memory. So she feels very deep, and lots of this gayness is just the way.
Well, like you said, it sort of helps her go from one person to another.
Because if she was like this all the time, she couldn't get around. And it's like people who get too involved in just passing little things of the day can't go on and cover all the activities she does, like taking care of Miss Phillips at noon, and her hair be fixed at 3 o'clock, and let's see, she had a lesson this morning. And then she's going to be at that social tonight. Look what a day. And taping in mid-morning.
Mm-hmm. And she wasn't hurt at all?
No.
At least?
Not that you could tell.
Couldn't tell it.
And I got her news article out. Now you look at that for 70-something. That'd be enough for a young person to have to be very well organized, wouldn't you? Or at least flexible. To have some kind of trade along with a little energy. Oh. Mm-hmm.
How do you figure that?
Well, you got a little bit of Ishmael to start with Norman Vincent Peale, and riding on, not choosing to ride in a fine car on his trip from Miami back, but riding on the diesel.
Yeah.
And by doing this, he saw a little bit of life like Ishmael going to sea.
Yeah.
He found the engineer with the church picture in his pocket, and people changing trains and saying their prayers. And if he had been in the club car, he would never have seen it.
That's Ishmael in reverse. What that does for Ishmael is to free him from looking for people saying their prayers and carrying their picture of their church and their billfold.
Yeah.
So that they can see people like Lois.
See people like Lois?
Yeah.
I was thinking of it in terms of him leaving this big city and not going to sea. He can't go to sea, maybe, but he can take the lower road, people's road, and see a little bit of life on his journey.
I get that.
Something Carl brought up one time is that you know, as long as the doctors aren't pressed or anything, they don't seem to have too many problems.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, for instance, astigmatism. Years ago, you hardly ever saw a doctor with astigmatism because it has something to do with nervous tension, occasionally not allowing the muscles to focus good, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes people can get too nervous and they just don't focus at all.
Oh, really?
Mm-mm.
Oh,
they just don't. In fact, they can get so nervous, really nervous, that they can get hysterical blindness. They actually say they can't see and temporarily blind, and you have to convince them that they can.
Yeah.
And you can do it by flipping things and showing them. And I noticed occasionally when I was working with little children that came in from Florida Council for the Blind, which are always indigent darkies,
yeah,
they would be scared to death. And you could get zero performance out of them. You'd think they were totally blind until you could go through their fear and convince them they could see.
Yeah.
It's kind of off. But anyway, on this stigmatism and this little bit of nervousness that's manifested in white race predominantly, as time goes on and they're becoming more socialized by their own desire, this is popping up.
It's popping just sad up to see it, isn't it?
And the ulcers are beginning to come.
Yeah.
And this is sort of like Arthur. Arthur has just kind of enough of the brains, I guess you'd say, to know that something's a little different. He's probably known it for a long time. And has a little something in himself, perhaps, that causes actually a physical conflict with him. He has more aches and pains than most anybody I know.
Oh. Terry.
That aren't always real.
He could get that right from his
mother.
Yeah.
He was convinced one time that he had really injured his eye when he was working over there at the place, you see. And he'd only remember it when he was drunk. And so we finally took him in and checked it out. There wasn't anything wrong with it. But he's always coming up and telling me what's wrong. It's sort of interesting what they get that this would happen with him when he's drunk. And Old West, you know, the real Old West that works over on the place, has this thing about the white man always doing him in when he's drunk.
Oh, really?
And he'll never say anything about it while he's sober. But one day he was drunk, and I was in the car with Jancy, and he said he wanted to come over and see the baby because he hadn't seen her before. But he said, you know, I thought I better ask you first because you know how it is. If you don't, then a colored man comes over and talks to a white woman, he gets shot. And I said, Wes? You know that, you know, that's not so. I said, you know, you could come up to the house and say you want to see this baby and I would be happy to show it to you. I said, I don't know where you get an idea like that. And he says, oh, no, it's not that way. White men will shoot these darkies. And he always gets this on his mind. And you wouldn't believe it, but the young West, you know, so he's going to get some ideas. His are different. West reflects the old idea. And the younger West comes along with the idea that he's going to show you that he's better than you are, you know. And one time he tangled with Boss Billy, as he calls him, when he was drunk up in Micanopy. And you know that Wesley tried to beat Billy up over a tractor. I think West had gone up to Micanopy with him. Billy went down, was notified, and went down to try to get the tractor back, and he was about to beat him up. And one time I was up at Mary's, this doesn't sound very nice, and I really went down to see because one of the children was sick, and I had worms or something. I had taken some medicine down. And although I had gone down to help, for some reason he must have been the anti-white that day, and he kept talking to me about, well, you really ought to come down here to see us instead of us always going up there. And I said, well, Wes, I'm here. That's what I came for. And then he wouldn't leave it alone. He kept on saying, he says, you know, you're just as stingy as snot. It stuck in my mind. I had forgotten that. And here I brought this stuff down. But he was just drunk enough to try and every way he could to insult me. And Mary was standing there. Mary didn't say anything.
Nothing she could do.
Nothing she could do. And I said,
make it worse.
I said, Wesley, you're drunk. And walked off. But yet, he still be dependent on you. He came up there drunk one time. He's about to shoot his brother-in-law. That's when they all lived down in that one little house.
Yeah.
He's mellowed. And he came up there to me. He said, you got to keep me from shooting him. And I said, well, just sit down here on the step. he did take a pot shot at Mary. And Mary came up and spent the night with us.
I don't doubt that.
He did.
She's such a gentleman.
She is, yeah. He did. It was all about her brother-in-law. But then sometimes, he's good-hearted, though. And he does take care of these brothers and sisters of hers.
Yeah.
And so, when he gets drunk, he always comes and tells me about that, too. And that he's taking care of them all these years. And I said, yes, Wes, you're a good boy. You've really been a good boy to him. That's what he wants to hear.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what he wants to hear.
Yeah.
Right, you're just oh. Magic. Magic, you see. I'd never find out anything about West knowing.
I always get it on Friday night.
Yeah.
Anytime I drive a car up there, they'll come up to the car and talk to me.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah. It's real funny.
On Friday night?
On Friday night. That's when they hold court. You know, they finally build put a table down there.
Oh,
those
up at the bar. Up at the restaurant.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they'll come up and talk to you.
Yeah, they come up and talk to me. There's something on their minds. What's so funny is very often it's insulting. Or somebody would take affront.
Yeah.
But they come up and just feel this. It's like him getting brave enough to say that to me. You know, some people would have shot somebody for saying something like that to them. I usually just laugh it off, you know.
Yeah.
But it sure stuck with me.
Or just never go back again.
Oh, yeah. That's right. I'm for wham yow, and he hardly ever saw me lose my temper, I guess. And he says, what in the world is going on here? And I said, well, Viola and I just can't stay in the same house together, I guess.
Yeah.
We both try to run it at the same time, and it doesn't work.
Yeah.
And so if she was going to work for me, I had to let her run it, pretty much. You couldn't tell me hard. I was working for nothing. In fact, I was paying a babysitter at home, you know, while I worked. And these waitresses kept fussing and fussing about the way these tables were being run, because each one of them becomes quite greedy. It's just unfortunate, but it's that way. And I got real tired of it one night, and I finally just handed one of them the coffee pot and said, here, you can just take it or leave it tonight, and I don't care how they come in, I'm leaving. And I just got up and walked out. And I left them in a mess, and it was a mess, because there was no one to direct the dining room for the rest of the night. And when I'm fed up, that's it. And I've done this to people.
But that happens so seldom.
It happens seldom.
And then the next day, you don't hold it against
them. I don't hold it against them. The only one woman bugged me from the state level in the auxiliary for one whole year because I stood up to her.
Yeah.
And she finally took the opportunity to insult me in front of everybody.
Yeah.
And I didn't say anything to her then.
Yeah.
But when it came time to write a report of your honest feelings, I put it down there that how can anyone expand their knowledge or thinking when you're insulted from the chair?
Yeah.
It's most unbecoming.
But I
put it down in writing.
I remember when you were setting that out. But that happens so seldom.
Yeah. It happens. Bother me too much. The women's club, people in the women's club are tedious to me. Because they can't make decisions and move on, and everybody has to check back with everything, and you can't just take something and do it. Everybody's afraid they're going to step on somebody's toes. And I always feel like if you're given a job, somebody's got to have confidence in you to do it, and that you're just supposed to go ahead and do it.
Yeah.
And
well, now you don't work in the women's club very much.
Only independently. They'll have to give me a job to do by myself, or maybe with one person that I can work with. Otherwise, I won't work. I was on one committee last year, youth conservation, and it was to do a program, and she was easy to work with, and she took a part, and I took a part, and we did it, and we only had 2 phone calls. Now, that suits me fine.
I don't think...
I just don't want to work with the big ones, big groups. I haven't always been that way. You probably weren't aware of it even then. When I was in Junior Women's Club, I was corresponding secretary. I worked independently. And I was the recording secretary. I worked independently. And when I worked on the state recruitment thing, although I had to work with people all over the state, I still worked pretty much independently there because I directed it. But as far as really working in small in groups, and in scholarship, only 3 people. I only work with 3 people on that. I don't work with a large group of women. Publicity, I was the only one on the committee. Only one. And I've been a loner on more committees than you can name. And I've always pretty much done that.
And you understood it?
Oh, yes. I understand that I can't tolerate it. And I get very up. I don't get... Well, I went in on one, and after I saw these women just ruining it and just taking all the time that could be constructive, I just said, if you want me to do it, you leave me alone. I'll finish it for you. And they left me alone, and I finished it.
They're all intelligent people, you know.
But they would get sidetracked on something when you go in for these interviews. I just wanted to...
Well, this is the end of that long, nice visit with Lois and Florence. On Wednesday, the 23rd of July, 69, Channel 2 over, around 190. The last part of it was on the porch with Florence after Lois went in to visit with Ms. Phillips at the hospital. And this is the end of the visit on Wednesday, the 23rd of July, 69, with Lois and Florence. Channel 2 over, around 190. Florence,
Do
you have a minute?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I was just,
What Beatty was doing at the bar?
Well, he discovered, when I walked in, he had a row of quarters and nickels and dimes.
Yeah.
And, he was holding them together and marking them with a magic marker on the side. You just hold them together and just make one line up the side. So that each coin would have, a black mark on it.
Oh.
And then he was going to take them and put them back in the drawer. See, the way they do at night, they check up, and then he puts some change in each of the compartments. And he always leaves the drawer open.
The cash register?
Yes. Customary. Why, I don't know.
I never heard of that.
And I think it's so that you know that it's checked and everything. I don't know. I think he keeps the one in the front closed and the one in the whiskey room, but the one in the back bar ain't the one they leave open. I don't know. It may have something to do with the checking of it. And occasionally they may exchange money out of the, like, petty cash during the day. I don't know. And he's doing this so that when the coins come back, he can just check them, and he'll know whether it's his money or not that went out the back door. Because they have done this one time before, and he marked them with a little bit of fingernail polish, a little red.
Yeah.
And sure enough, it came back, and then James and he got a hold of the boys. But this is a different set of boys, and the same thing's repeating itself.
Yes.
And one day I think they just took a quarter and a couple of dimes, because he noticed it was kind of low.
Yeah.
And then they got a little bit braver, and day before yesterday, maybe 3 days ago, I think he said they got 6 dimes and a couple of quarters. And then yesterday I went back when he was getting put some money in before the business starts in the evening. He says they got $1.90 today. And so he will then take the coins that he marked and tonight put them in the drawer. And then he goes on about his business. And then when they go and swipe them today, this morning, probably. Well, they'll come back this afternoon and spend them for ice cream.
Spend them over there?
Yeah. And he got a clue that this was going on because they seemed to be flush with money.
Yeah.
The fact that it looked a little low, and I guess he just sort of thought, well, gee, these little kids sure have a lot of money. But I think it's sort of funny that they steal it from him and turn around and spend it with him.
They're just boys.
And they've been buying a lot of ice cream in the last couple of weeks. I asked him how many of them back then. He says, oh, James has several. He does this in the summer, though. He has, I don't know whether they're all his or not. I can never tell how many kids are his and how many belong to somebody else. You know how that is. Some of these are his daughters, then.
Yeah.
But there are two or three boys over there all the time. He puts them to work doing little errands for him that sort of help out. And then he has to vacuum, and they move the chairs and things like
now
that.
Now, he's... Beatty's had that all his life, hasn't he?
Oh, yes. When you have help over there, you have this problem off and on. I tell you what, when it really gets sort of comical, though, is when one steals from the other. And this has happened, too. Curtis, one of the boys down the hill here,
yeah.
He had the stickiest fingers going.
Yeah.
He's so bad that his grandpa used to lock his own house to keep his grandson out. And had trunks on the front porch and would do the same thing. So old Curtis was over there, busting dishes.
Yeah.
Well, you can see how it probably is tempting. They get a regular salary, and these girls wait on the tables, and people tip them and leave a dollar here and 50 cents there.
Yeah.
And sometimes they think, well, gee, part of this is mine. And occasionally you have to watch them like a hawk because they'll, take one now and then.
Yeah.
Some much worse than others. Well, old Curtis was real good at taking them in the first place, but he got a little bit brave and took some money out of one of the cook's pocketbooks in the kitchen, in the pantry. And it had to be him.
Yeah.
And that really caused a big furor.
Well, the cook raised Cain.
Yes, I mean, really raised Cain. It's hard, very hard, to find a busboy or someone over there that's honest.
They won't pick
up. You'll go through five or six before you'll find one that won't pick up the money.
Yeah.
So you contend with that. And sometimes the cooks will... Well, the cooks that he has now, Mary Lou and Mary Bell, would never steal anything. They just wouldn't.
Well, Dow's not conscious of this.
Yes, he is. Oh, yeah. He knows it goes on. Because he talks about it. He knows from here, because Eva, that's Curtis's and David's, Billy's and so forth's mother, used to love to steal, too. And when she worked over there, Beatty kept buying bacon. He didn't know where all this stuff was going. And he thought they were using an awful lot of bacon back there, and found out old Eva was taking it home by the pound. And lots of times we would see wrappers from things at the restaurant that were coming up from down the hill. And so we knew she's carting. We found out here she's carting stuff home. But Beatty had to check it out there, too. And he knew that they swipe. He does. Still knows that they swipe things from back.
Now, that doesn't get under his skin. He just expects it.
He knows that it's going to... Yeah, he expects it. He knows that they do it. And so you... try to be on the lookout and remedy it. That's what he said yesterday. I can talk because, who's out in Gertrude's out in the yard, and Gertrude's as honest as they can be. I'd trust her indefinitely. But he says, he was marking those coins, 9 out of 10 of them will steal. And I guess he should know. He said, you know what one of them did? Said he stole my license tag off this back bar. And one did. Somebody stole his license tag. Hadn't been put on his car.
Oh.
Yeah, it was right there back of the counter. He said it had to be somebody like that, because it had to be that stupid. Somebody had to be kind of dumb,
yeah.
you know, to
yeah.
know that these things are registered. They're just going to see that and put it on their car.
Yeah. Right, that's amazing.
And you have to kind of watch it because they'll pick up whiskey or anything else when they come in there. You know, it's not just the darkies, though. I won't put it that way at all. You in the restaurant business, you have a lot of, awful lot of thievery going on. In that back bar, they put these nice lamps on the table when they first opened up, and they 17 of them were stolen. Those things cost about $14 a piece.
Yeah.
And they're talking about gall, one night, Jackie happened to be walking, that waitress, from the back bar, this wasn't long ago, about 2 months ago, from the back bar to the front of the restaurant, which was already closed for the night, and she looked back through the double glass door, and there were two men walking off with two barrel chairs out the front door.
Right front?
That's right. And so she ran after them and got them.
Right.
Two of those big barrel chairs right out the front door.
Just walking out with them.
Walking out with them. Now that's
Bunch, what did they do with you when you ran off to the woods and spent the day in those palmetto thickets when you were 4 years old? Did they tan you?
Not too much. I really didn't get too many spankings. I was reprimanded for not, more or less, I didn't have good sense of time. You know, I got preoccupied with what I was doing, and it wouldn't dawn on me that it was late.
You don't remember what you did when you was 4 years old?
Oh, I remember what I did when I was three. That's why I say I think sometimes I'm senile, because I can recall lots of instances, and my mother says, yes, you're right. I remember things that were in the house, and I remember something that was stolen from one of the bedrooms. We lived on the lake on Alta Lake, and I remember Mother had three monkeys, those see no evil, hear no evil, speak no evil monkeys, and they were in the bedroom. And I, as a child, that'd be one thing I'd, you know, think about. And someone came across the lake, Alto Lake.
Yeah.
And stole, they broke in Grandpapa's, he had a smokehouse. And he used to make his own blackberry wine and beer.
Yeah.
He's an old Dutchman, you know.
Quite a man.
And, oh, he had other smoke hands, things like that out there. And they got in the smokehouse, came by boat, and got in the house and stole the monkeys. And I had to be 3 1/2 then, or 4.
Do you remember that?
And, yeah. And I remember being burned in one of the bedrooms. I remembered which one. I was 2 1/2 then, Mother said.
Yeah.
But I didn't remember who was with me when it happened, but I remember, and I had to be before about 4 when I remember Mama's brothers and sisters, which would have been teenagers then, playing poker by a lamp in the kitchen. And I remember once when we had an accident, I had to be about 4 then. I had an old flatbed truck, and Marguerite, and that's Mama's sister, and George, and I think Robert, all of us were out there playing. It was out there on the lake. That's where the old home place was. That was before, well, they built a new place when I was 5 years old. And it was before, so it was a good bit before that. And
where was the new place, in town?
No, it was out there at the intersection.
Oh, I see.
In the middle of the road there.
Yeah.
The granddaddy had a filling station and a old grocery store there. And then when I was about 5 years old, he built a great big two-story building, which was a large restaurant in those days, was one of the biggest ones around. And then he built a tourist court. And that was, you know, one of the first tourist courts, too, between Ocala and Jacksonville. And he built the warehouse. He even had a dairy there one time.
Yeah.
And so he had the little filling station and a little restaurant. They had a little restaurant too, and the grocery store there. And we lived over on, I was living with them then, We lived over on Alto Lake in the old home place. It once upon a time was the kind of house that had porches all around it.
Yeah.
That's where the hand pump was. I remember being washed in the tub. And
yeah.
Big old magnolia tree out there with a whippoorwill in it that always kept me company every night. But anyway, I remember that truck, and we were all out underneath a great big old pecan tree there. And one of the kids was learning how to drive, you know, about like Dallas and Carla's age. And Marguerite was about 13 at the time. Let's see, 5, 6, 7, 10, 11, 12, 13. Yeah, she would have been 13. Not less than that, I guess. One of the teenage boys started to drive, and he got the thing in reverse and hit the pecan tree. And I went flying over the back of the truck onto the ground, and Marguerite got cut. I remember on her forearm. And, calamity. I remember that. And, I was real small then. And there were lots of things that happened over there on the old place. Remember the guineas? Just a lot of things. We used to go down and swim. But I don't know what it is, but they trusted me by myself a lot more than I trust my own children. And I was allowed to go down to the lake, which was about a half a mile or more, three-fourths of a mile from the house. And we had a big German police dog called Joe, and they would just send the dog with me. And I would go down and stay all day.
At the lake.
Uh-huh. Play by myself. I didn't particularly get lonely. I used to find turtles and, you know, things down there. And I'd just play in the water by myself for half to 3 hours of time and then come on back through the woods. I can remember being a little afraid of snakes and kind of watching carefully as I went through the path and when I crossed the fences.
Oh, really?
And I remember being chased by a black racer one time. About 5 years old, 6 years old. But beyond that, I don't remember being afraid of anything else.
Yeah.
Just watch out for the snakes. I remember Mom used to always say, watch out for the snakes. And if I saw a moccasin, you know, watch out for the moccasins.
Yeah.
Around the post, they usually would get around the post underneath the dock. And so she used to tell me not to get her under the dock.
But does your mama think you too particular with your children?
She thinks I am sometimes. But I am less strict on them about some things than Carl.
He's not there.
Oh, yeah. In some ways, he will not watch them on some dangerous things, but I'm more for letting them go by themselves somewhere. Because I feel like this is necessary. Like going to the movie, he wouldn't let them go to the movie. Three of them alone, and I said, that's silly. He said, you don't know who's going to come and sit down beside them. And I said, well, all the rest of their life they're going to have to contend with this, and what you need to do is teach them what to do in case somebody does and let them go.
Well, what do you let them do by themselves out there? They play outdoors all the time.
Well, I let them go down in the woods, and Dow and his little cousin a couple weeks ago took their tent and went down and spent the night down there.
Nobody there?
Nobody. No.
Well, what is it you don't let them do?
Well, I don't let them stay gone as long as I used to. I think that's, my mom used to get mad at me about that more than anything. I did that up until I was a teenager. I was bad about that. I remember I got whipping when I was in kindergarten because I didn't think about the time and just took off and didn't turn up home. And I remember Mama was just about ready to skin me alive. She was so worried. And my grandmother says, she had a real good sense of humor. She says, leave her alone. She just wasn't thinking.
Yeah.
And I remember she wouldn't let Mama whip me. And later on, I was riding a horse when we lived over here. And I left early one morning, and I was having so much fun just riding through the woods. Ate oranges for lunch off a tree, and I hadn't appeared by 4 in the afternoon, and Mother had a posse out over here looking for me.
Yeah. How old?
I was 14 years old.
That's a marvelous age.
So I didn't really get out of it, and I still had a wanderlust, sort of. And I guess when I was 18, I decided I wanted to go to Cuba. And my dad's mother weren't too crazy about this teenager just taking off, you know, kind of by herself. Set with another teenager, and my dad says, well, you can make the money, you can go. And so I made the money, and I went. Couldn't speak English, didn't know nothing.
So when you were 14?
Well, it's not quite 18, 17.
18, you went to Cuba?
Yeah. Caught a train down to Miami.
You and who?
Made my own plans. Our name was Elaine Neal.
She was about your age?
Yeah, she's a year older.
And you, the two of you, 17 years old, went to Cuba?
Yeah.
And you made your own money?
Mm-hmm. And, of course, I spent all by the time I got back. I remember Beatty met us in Ocala and got off the train. He says, well, I guess the first place you want to go is to get something to eat. And I said, how'd you read my mind? He said, I knew you'd be broke.
Yeah.
And I was, and I hadn't had anything to eat in about 24 hours. Was starving to death. But we had some rather cautious moments down there because we couldn't speak Spanish. And here were these two young ladies, you know, on the loose down there.
Yeah. I don't know why girls can't travel.
Nowadays it may be a little bit more hazardous, but when I was in Virginia, you know, I told you I went up to see the plays in New York. Well, I used to take off in spring on vacation and go to New York. And I didn't know New York from Holy Ground. I got lost so many times it wasn't funny. I never knew where I was.
Oh, be so?
I went with a couple girls.
Yeah.
And I'd go see the plays, and we'd start early in the morning. We'd end up at 1 o'clock in the morning, still trying to see all we could, you know, in the spring vacation time.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw Streetcar Named Desire, Anne of a Thousand Days.
Gorgeous.
Yeah, what I liked. And then when we finished school, after Vanderbilt, I got kind of fed up with the institution up there and working. And I decided I wanted to go somewhere, and this friend of mine did too, Martha Copeland. She's from Pittsburgh. And we just don't like the letter. That sounds crazy, but we liked the letter we got from the University of Oregon telling us about Mount Hood and the seacoast near and Vancouver and Thousand Islands within short distance and Crater Lake and all that. And we had not gotten scores from our state board, and we did not know whether we were even registered or not to work. And the two of us took off from Jacksonville for Oregon, and we didn't know a soul. 3,000 miles. Mama said she just didn't know when she saw me just take off. Because I had had signed a year's thing to work out there. But I didn't know whether I would be allowed to work once I got there. Because I didn't have a state board. But I said, well, Mama, don't worry. I said, I've got my white uniforms, and if I don't pass, I can always be a waitress. I'm experienced. And so we got there and found an apartment. I wish I could write, because I had more funny experiences while I lived there than you could shake a stick at.
But now that's all, Mother.
You probably haven't.
Your mother has been long-suffering.
Hadn't she, though?
Well, you know she has.
Well, you know, she was awfully brave, though. I think about it. I was a swimmer, always. And I can't remember when I couldn't swim. I don't ever recall not being able to swim. And you know, before the lifeguards were so particular down there at Daytona, I can remember swimming way out looking for a sandbar, way out in the ocean.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't anymore let one of my kids go out there and fly the moon. But you know, I encountered actually drowning several times doing this.
Yeah.
I remember getting caught in the undertow and having to go with that crazy undertow for 2 miles down the beach to get out.
Yeah.
And I remember Mama sitting up there on that third floor watching me out in the middle of the ocean. You can ask her. I used to be crazy. And I know one time she went down to Silver Springs, and these two boys taught me into swimming down Silver River to paradise. I didn't have any more sense trying to swim that far. And they were really pulling a joke on me. This was Billy's brother-in-law, Bill Blue.
Yeah.
And I didn't realize that current was so strong. And I got in that thing. I just about didn't make it that far. I was too far for me to swim. But my mother and dad had come down to show someone Silver Springs that day. It was on, when they used to close on Mondays over an old place, because I was only about 14 minutes. And they happened to be way down Silver River and looked around, and there I was. A couple miles from the basin, paddling along. You know, they never reprimanded me about that.
Yeah.
And I would just get after my kids and wouldn't let them do something. I know I watch them, though, in the ocean. I let Carla go out pretty far. But I'm always there. But, you know, when you think about it, Mama was always there, too. She's just looking. And
not much she could do in the hotel room.
No, not too much. But she was a lot braver than I am about mine, a lot, and I realize this.
Well, you still are right venturesome.
Yeah, I...
With your children.
Yeah. I let them do more than a lot of people do. I know sometimes people come out here and they say, you know, where are they going? And I say, they're going down to the lake or...
I think there's a little bit more civilization, and that's added to the perils than there was at Waldo. You know there is a great deal more.
Oh, yeah. I think you have to just read the papers. You know, when I was little, I didn't think anything of going downtown at night.
Yes, 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 yes.
And you just don't do that anymore. It's some hazard.
Yeah.
When we were in Woods Hole, I know the Travises probably thought I was nuts, but I... had this wanderlust, and I wanted to go down to watch the ferries from Nantucket and Martha's Vineyard load one night at 11 o'clock. And I took one of the children with me, older ones, and walked down a good ways, a couple miles, down to where the ferries were loading and unloading. You know, it had never dawned on me what a dangerous thing I had done then.
Yes.
To go on down, and you know, somebody could have put me in one of those cars, had it, kid too, taken off.
You never know.
But it was fascinating at night to watch these people parking these cars.
Go listen to your tape.
Yeah. Will do.
Somebody on the line over here.
Okay, then.
Now that's Florence filled in what I was just studying and making a note about. She sees what it is. I never put it in just those words, but the children are growing up very much as she did, as much as they can with the conditions, as much as times that things have changed. So she keeps a hand in that world that she grew up in, that she likes, and she's letting the children grow up in that world as much as she can. And this is Thursday the 24th of July, 69. Thursday the 24th of July, 69. This is early in the morning, around 10 o'clock. And it's channel 2 over around 5:50. Around 5:50, channel 2 over. Thursday morning around 10 o'clock, the 24th of July, 69. Well, now the next day on Thursday, I guess it was tricky the way it was before. But when I left the tape for Lois to play, the one we just made on Wednesday, I stayed and asked her a question. She talked about her visit with Miss Phillips at the hospital. We've been tempted to go towards the church. We didn't want to just hit it point blank. This is one approach. This is late Thursday afternoon, around 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock. Channel 2 over, around 5:60 now. Thursday the 24th of July, 69. Thursday the 24th of July, 69. Now this is a session in the... by on the dining room table late Thursday afternoon. Lois talks about her visit at the hospital with Miss Phillips that she made on Wednesday morning after Florence and I were there and we taped. This is channel 2 over around 5:65 now. Around 5:65, channel 2 over.
Yeah. what you can do for him.
Well, I was up there again this morning.
Yesterday, when you were right up there the first time.
Well, now, we had bad experience up there yesterday, I thought. She won't eat.
Yeah.
And she told me Sunday when I saw her. Said they just bring a tray in here to go off and leave it, and I'm too weak, I can't cut it, and so I just don't eat.
Yeah.
And this Mrs. Burry down here asked about how she was, and I told her. She said, well, I know all about that, because her husband's brother was up there for a long time and finally died. Oh, he lingered and lingered and lingered, and sandwiched everything the brother could, and he got that way he wouldn't eat. She said, we found out that's what to do. Unless you have a private nurse, they just come and bring the tray and they go off and leave it. And he wouldn't eat. So she said, there's a lot of Burrys. We just made out a schedule. Saw us went there every day when he ate and saw that he ate. Mm-hmm. And she said, I think you just thought we're going to have to do that. And sure, I'll go someday. Not just for the Baptist. She's been to the Baptist church, but she has friends all over the town. She said, any of us will go. Mm-hmm. But we'll have to get organized. And so we asked Pendergrass, he's our pastor, who has charge of it now. See, she had no people. They had a legal meeting. Bill Wynn was her, going to be executive of her will.
Mm-hmm.
Bill's not here now to do much. He can do that still, but he can't be here much to be on the ground about helping. So John Malcolm, the attorney, here in town, and Bill Wynn came up to Pittsburgh, and our pastor. So they formed a company sometimes, budgets out what they do for them.
Mm-hmm.
So I asked Mr. Pendergrass about it. He said, well, they take meals, they take trays around between 12 and 12:30, and between 5 and 5:30. Well, she'll have to do a breakfast. But we thought some of us could be there, these other meals.
Mm-hmm.
And so we appointed this Mrs. Bateman in our church to make out a schedule. Which I don't know how to do, but I just go down the alphabet. Well, seems that the first was available to the D's, and that came to me. So she said, the B's can't go, and the C's are out of town. And so I said, well, I'll go now. It didn't suit me a bit in the road for yesterday, because I had this big thing all last night, for one thing. And I had my mind full. I didn't feel like I could, but I said, all right, I'll go. I'll go today. So I got up there just about 12 o'clock. And I didn't eat, see, before that time. And they didn't bring her tray until nearly 1:30.
Well, I never heard of such a thing.
Well, there were no, it wasn't just her tray, there were no trays brought on that floor.
So that
late. And when I went in, she was lying there with her eyes closed, and I don't want to wake anybody. My Uncle John, you say sleep's my best medicine.
Yeah.
So I wasn't about to wake her if she were asleep. So Flora had sent some flowers. I had to go by Flora's yesterday morning to pick up the flowers, and so I arranged the flowers, tried to be as quiet as I could, but I kept my eye on her, and her eyes seemed to open. So I said, Myrtle, are you just resting, or are you asleep? Well, she just kind of drowned it. But she woke up and we pissed, and I said, I've come to help you eat when they bring that tray. And I kind of kidded her. I said, you won't get any strength at all unless you eat, and I'm going to see to it that you eat. I'm here today, and somebody else is going to be here tomorrow. We just made it up against her. And so she isn't herself. I don't mean her mind. I don't mean that, but her disposition. She's just kind of given up, and she's bored and everything like that.
Yeah.
So after a while, she said, I've got to get up. But she had these railings on the bed, and I said, I don't think they want you up. I've got to get up. And she began to make out. She said, I said, Myrtle, you must do that. I said, I can't help you. I don't have to take these things down. I said, you lie back down. You're not supposed to get up. And she was right ugly about it. So I said, well, wait a minute. I'll go up to the desk and see. So I went up to the desk. I said, the patient is 6:17 wants to get up. And can you send someone to help her get up? She said, the patient 6:17 has been up once today. And that's all I got out of her. So I said, Merle, they say you've been up once today. Evelyn, that's all on your chart. But I've got to get up. I'm going to get up. And she was just right to determine about it. But I said, I tell you what, let me raise the head of your bed. Maybe that changes this. Maybe that make you feel better. Oh, but she was awfully nervous, and I thought she was going to cry. Merle doesn't cry either, but she was just so irritated. She wanted to do what she wanted to do. And so I had time kind of consoling her. And but I said, well, I tell you what I'll do. I'll put on the light. I said, at the desk, they said you'd been up once. But I said, I'll put on the light and see what kind of help we can get. So I put on the light, and nobody ever did. And I stepped out in the hall, and there's only light on, as far as I could see. Only light on. So they weren't busy answering lights. But nobody came. And so?
Which hospital?
Alaska General. So it went on and on. And I began to get worried. The weather began to look bad, and I had really filed an appointment back down home. And I wanted to get to my car if I could before the rain started. And so way after a while, they brought the, about 1:15, they came in the hall. I heard the noise, and here was a big cart thing with all the trays. And they brought hers in, and she was a bit interested in it. We got the other tray for it, I said. She said, I want to get up. And the nurse said...
Now, you hadn't anticipated that.
No. I thought I'd been gone by then. And the colored girl brought in. She said, now, come on, eat it down, then get up. That's the system.
Oh.
You eat it down, and then you get up. I want to get up now. And then she said, I want to go to the bathroom. But she hadn't said that to me. She just said she wanted to get up. But she had, during the time, rubbed her stomach. I said, did your stomach hurt? She said, yes. But she still didn't say anything about the bathroom. Until finally said that to the girl. She said, well, I'll just tell you what she said. The nurse said, well, listen, I'll bring you the bedpan. I want to get up, she said. But she always said, never won't do that. I just bring it. So she took the tray then, took it back out there where it belonged. And, no, that bedpan didn't work. So she finally got her up and took her to the bathroom. And she did want to go to the bathroom. I found that out. I could tell that she wanted to go to the bathroom. Well, then they got her all fixed up and back. And she has this chain, this something to a bladder or a catheter or something. They had disconnected all that so she could go to the bathroom. Then came back and had to fix that all up then. Then get the tray back and then go out there and get the tray. So by that time, well, she was pretty well worn out. And the nurse was kind of worn out too. And I was there. So I was going to feed her, but the nurse began feeding her. We took the lid. I said, Myrtle, it's awful nice oranges. Don't you want some oranges? Your mouth seems so dry. No, she didn't want that. But I said, how about some tea? It has a lot of ice cubes in it. It's good for me. Taste the tea. No, she didn't like tea. So we took the... I said, that dessert looks mighty good. It was cherries or strawberries or something pink, fluffy, you know. And then we took the lid off of the main thing. And it was macaroni and cheese. That's right. And stewed tomatoes. And then bread and butter. That was the dinner. And she looked at it and I said, Myrtle, that looks good to me. That's macaroni and cheese. That's one of my favorites. Those good stewed tomatoes. And then the nurse began to feed her and she spit out, she said, and it got a bit of salt in it. Doesn't taste like anything. And they said, Miss Phillips, I don't believe you're supposed to have salt. But she said, I will put a little salt on it for you. So she put that in and she kind of spit that out too. And by that time, it was getting on and on. So I reached my pocketbook and I picked out a dollar bill and I stepped under the edge of the tray. And I said to the girl, I said, you stand here and you feed her. I've got to go. I've been here 2 hours. I said, you stand here and you feed her. She She said, "You don't have to do that." I said, "I know I don't have to do that, but I'm going to do it. And I want you to feed him." And I left. Then I came home here and I drank. I was going to stop at Jerry's and get something to eat, but the rain was too bad. So I came on home and I had Coca-Cola or something in there. Then I had to go to the beauty parlor. She told me when to come. And I didn't leave there till 7 o'clock.
Good.
Now, this woman doesn't know how to organize her schedule. Everybody's complaining about it. But she had the bride's sister, the bride's mother. Why didn't she tell me, "Miss Dixon, I can't take you today"? I would have accepted it.
Yeah.
So that was a long time today. But anyway, this morning then, I thought, I don't know who's going to feed Myrtle today, but I'm going to then see her. So I was up there early this morning, and she went in the bed. And the door of the bathroom was closed. So I thought maybe she was in there. And so in a few minutes, the colored girl came. I said, "Look like your patient's flown the cup. Or is she in the bathroom?" She said, "No, she's not in the bathroom." She said, "She's in a wheelchair up in the sitting room." "Oh," I said, "well, good, I'll go up there. Because it will find you straighten up your bed." So I went there. She looked kind of pale and bad. And her eyes kind of starry. I said to her yesterday, I said, "Myrtle, don't you want to put your glass on me?" You know. So, but she recognized me. I said, "Well, look who's here." I said, "I went down to 617. There's nobody down there." And I said, "How do you feel, Miss Lawrence? Feel better? You're looking better." "Oh, who could feel better in a place like this?" So I tried to give her a little pep talk. I said, "Now look here." I said, "You must get feeling better. You are feeling better. I know you must feel better. You look better." And I said, "Somebody else is going to come up here today and have see that you eat." And I said, "You must keep on trying, because we're trying. We're doing everything we think to do, because we want you back down there." I said, "The town thinks it just can't run without you. The Lions Club's already in mourning, because you've been gone so long. And the Baptist Church is about to fold up." And she laughed.
"Oh, really?"
Yes, yeah, she kind of laughed. I said, "Now, mean it." I said, "Now, you just work as hard as we're working this thing, and you'll get out." Because the doctor did tell Pendergrass, and Mrs. Pendergrass told me that last night at the party. She said that Dr. Andrews said she can get well if she wants to.
Really?
Mm-hmm. He said she can get well if she wants to.
Well, you're going to have to spend every morning up there?
No, I don't know how it's going to be, but it could be that it'd be kind of over the hump. Somebody's up there today, somebody's going again tonight.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Yeah, I think, I read it this way, that if she is her, that if she is at herself, that when she's had how we're trying, that maybe she will try a little harder. You know, I'm not going to go, others will go, I'm not going to go tomorrow.
Well, now, they may not have your touch.
Mm-hmm.
You see, when you talked about it, your voice was right cheerful. It made me feel good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, does that come from long practice?
Huh?
Does that come from long practice?
Uh-huh.
You've done that a long time?
Mm-hmm. Well, that's all I've done all my life. My mother and my father and two uncles and a brother-in-law. Well, they're not sick like that, but I mean, they were sick. They had to have their spirits up all the time.
And they were sick for a good long time.
But this is my first experience, though, with somebody sick in the hospital without a private nurse. Now, you just don't get much attention. And you have to wait for attention.
Yeah.
I've been in the hospital a few times. I had a hysterectomy at Mayo's. I had a thyroidectomy at Riverside. I had a tonsillectomy at Riverside. And I had special nurses all the time. Every time my uncle was in the hospital, they recommend nurses, private nurses, because they always had this prostate trouble or something where they had to have tubes and somebody, essentially, oxygen, where they had to have attention. And so they recommended nurses. So every experience I've had in hospital, we've had special nurses.
Well, can she get a nurse?
I don't know where she can afford it now. They're high, nurses around the clock. And the hospitals have gone up soon.
Well, you don't have to have one around the clock.
Well, I don't know if she could have it, not at night, but she could have one today. Well, she doesn't need somebody all the time.
At night, they give you that.
They make you sleep. They make you sleep.
Oh, you
they
sleep.
Make you sleep.
Well, you sleep at night.
Yeah, uh-huh. But she said to me, she lives over here in this big house, and they should run a boarding house over there, she and the mother. And then she married this Mr. Coons, who was a star boarder.
Mm-hmm.
And so after he married her, he said, I can make a living for three people. So they dismissed all the boarders. And so they took this, the rooms are small over there. He took, knocked out of the wall, downstairs between two rooms, made one nice, also nice long living room. Very nice. Then upstairs they did the same thing. Made a very long bedroom. And, but they were both small. And that gave them plenty of living room. That was their bedroom. Plenty of closet space and plenty of things for both he and she. But they don't. They only have one bathroom in the whole house,
yeah.
And it's upstairs.
Yeah.
Now then, but she has good floor space down there and a little back porch down there, which they could enclose and put a bathroom down there. That's what we urge her to do all the time, and she has never been agreeable to it until now. Now, they have a man come. She authorized them to have a man come, make an estimate. When they had a man come, he said the job would be between $1,100 and $1,200. Well, they still said that was all right. But now
they... Somebody come all the way from Gainesville?
No, no. Somebody member of our church. Is that Irvin? But he works for a high price union. He's got to charge so much, it seems.
Yeah.
So, anyway, they... But at the time the estimate was made, she was really having this operation. And they didn't know where she'd get it from. And they thought there was no need to spend that money. Like that. She'd probably never be able to live there alone. So they kind of just tabled it.
Lois, let me tell you, I read this article, and I listen to what you say, because you know these things, and I don't. And, you know, just attitude. I think it was in Life magazine, and it was about a year ago, and it was called The Crunch of the Churches, and it had five outstanding cases of ministers who had tried to go along with the times and go in the direction from beliefs and Sunday sermons into doing things during the week. Just that direction. And in one case, they said, the church decided to do that. And the minister would go out and visit people like Miss Phillips. And they found out that he was sort of useless. He didn't even know how to give him a drink of water.
This is a visit with Lois. She's reporting on the visit with Miss Phillips at the hospital on Thursday, the 24th of July, 69. And this is the end of Channel 2 Over and the end of this reel. We continued on the next reel. Lois on the visit with Miss Phillips and the end of Channel 2 Over on Thursday, the 24th of July, 69.